The following is a production of Professor Robert Barnwell. Each episode includes insights provided by the chairman, CEOs, and CFOs of the world's most successful corporations, as well as thought leaders from premier business schools and international consultancies. If you and your team would like more information on corporate leadership and strategic management, or would like to learn more about Professor Barnwell, his research, and how he may be able to assist your company, please visit Professor Barnwell's website at robertgbarnwell.com.
Hello and welcome to CEO Talk Radio. I'm your host, Robert Barnwell. During the last episode, we spoke with Anil Menawat and Adam Garfine, co-founders of Menawat & Company and co-authors of Profit Mapping and Execution Dynamics, about using profit mapping to drive cost efficiencies. This is episode 62, and we'll speak again with Anil and Adam about using profit mapping and the principles from their book Execution Dynamics to fuel strategy and revenue growth. Adam, Anil, welcome back to CEO and CFO Talk Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Robert.
During the last episode, we focused, I'd say most of our conversation, on how to use the tools and suggestions contained within your two books, Profit Mapping and Execution Dynamics, to manage the product and service portfolio for new product and service development, and then to ultimately, of course, to help grow the top line. But during today's discussion, I'd like to step back and look at both books from a more traditional context, and a context I'm sure that most people think of when they think of profit mapping in particular, and that is in the use to achieve operating efficiency and cost reduction. But before that, can you remind listeners of what profit mapping entails and perhaps share a story or two of companies who've used profit mapping and the results that they were able to achieve?
Yes. Thank you again, Robert, for having us. Let me step back and mention that in our first book, Profit Mapping, that book was largely talking about what profit mapping is and why it works. In other words, the business fundamentals behind it. And with Execution Dynamics, the focus is a bit more applied, discussing or going into the details of the holistic thinking and action backed by qualitative and quantitative tools that we have at our disposal, and ultimately to show or to provide a way for the readers to quickly learn how to do it for themselves within their own organizations. Profit mapping itself, you can think of as a systematic way of thinking, a dynamic analysis, and holistic decision making to help leaders make decisive, cost-effective actions. We like to use somewhat of an orchestra analogy among our many, that it's very much like orchestrating the best operational, supply chain, customer, and financial performance. It's not something that's easy to accomplish. There are a lot of activities to be coordinated, to be structured properly, and they all have to be performed in sync with each other. And the time part, which I'll touch upon, is not easy to do well. So as I said, profit mapping is based on fundamentals, business fundamentals. It's not just a process-oriented approach. There's a great interest and focus on financial performance as a part of this. We'll also add that profit mapping is an excellent tool for unmasking hidden potential within organizations. It's something that can be done quite rapidly, and oftentimes what we find is that when you have a holistic vantage point with which to look into your organization for opportunities, sometimes that helps you identify even the simplest of changes that can have a dramatic impact on your operations and that cascade up and are visible at a financial level as well. Now, for business leaders, those who have bottom line responsibility for their particular group or division or so on, it's a proven way to bridge the gap between what they want to achieve and the ability of an organization to deliver it. And this is an issue for organizations of all sizes, ranging from a startup to a multinational. Obviously, the larger an organization is, the more complex the environments can become.
I'd like to just add in there that one of the things from the operational improvement and the cost reduction part is because we use a very integrated approach, we are able to look at small and minor changes that you may make in your operations, and we can carry that information all the way to the EBITDA level. So you can see the impact of that on the EBITDA of the organization.
Great.
Yes, that's extremely important and quite valued by the companies that we work with. One of the questions that might be a good segue into some examples is how do you get started with profit mapping? And, you know, in the most simple of terms, the book Execution Dynamics is a great way to start your learning process and how it works. Within the context of thinking about your own organizations, what we find is that when you delve into the actual performance, what you can see is looking across your portfolio, anywhere from up to 40% of what you do from a customer standpoint is not profitable. This is based on some of the literature put out by Jonathan Burns over at MIT, so I'd like to give a shout out to him. And within that context, you know, maybe 20 to 30% of what organizations do are the real profit drivers. And the rest are areas that just are not profitable no matter do not contribute to profitability at all. So what I would like to say is that we're not biased in terms of which of those opportunities we go after. It really boils down to the particular focus or strategy of the organization. We can go into, for example, a well-performing group and make it even better and help them grow for the future and do so in a profitable way, or we can go into a troubled area and quickly turn it around. So that, for example, perhaps you can reduce the difficult financial situation or frustrated customers or so on. What we do suggest is that you pick areas, as you look at where to get started, that are of importance to senior leaders that generally will have a customer impact as well as a financial impact. So to introduce a couple of ways, or case studies, if you will, and we can go into these in more detail later, you know, in today's economy, we see some improvements in many sectors, and we work in the automotive among others. And in this, we'll talk later about a company that is actually growing. It has made use of the down economy to improve what it is doing. And we are going into this organization at one of their best, if not the best, plant. And the idea behind this is that this is a strategically important facility for this organization, and they want to ensure its successful continued growth while minimizing all sorts of risks. And so the idea is, how do you make it better through reconfiguring it in ways to help it meet its current objectives, but also its growth objectives? And maybe an earlier example that we can go into would be in the different cycle, when the economy is going down and organizations are bleeding money, one of the things that you can quickly come in and look at how to reconfigure operations in order to both stop the bleeding financially, but also in a positive sense to do things such as to increase your flexibility, to respond to changes in the marketplace, and to position yourself for future growth. So we'll go into some of those examples in more detail later on.
I think that's a good choice. It's a nice comparison and contrast, if you will, you know, a highly performing company or business versus one that may be experiencing some difficulty. But before we get to those two companies, why don't we remind listeners kind of, you know, maybe the key or the principal tools and thoughts behind profit mapping. And here I'm referring to the three pillars and some of the tools that we discussed yesterday. Would you care to touch upon those briefly?
Yes, I'd like to talk about this in two parts. The three pillars are business methods, systems thinking, and dynamic analysis. So let me start with business methods. Basically, profit mapping is extremely complementary to any business method that is out there. It's because it's a very structured, systematic approach. I would also point out that sometimes people think that that means slow. But in the case of profit mapping, in fact, we can move more quickly, more rapidly than many other approaches out there. So when it comes to business methods, it's helpful to think about profit mapping as being extremely complementary to what organizations are doing to improve their operations and their financial performance. And there's another context that we think about in, for business methods, which has to do with an information technology context. When organizations, when managers look to their enterprise systems, their ERP systems, and they look to make decisions about how to change for the better the future, they find that their existing systems are very inadequate for looking forward. They're terrific for what they're designed to do, for accounting for past performance. And so in this context, we like to talk about knowledge providing a business context to the data. And profit mapping provides that, and we may be able to touch upon that in more detail later on. Now, the second pillar is systems thinking, and basically what this means is that everything we do is both holistic and finely detailed at the same time. What that means is you can't separate the whole from the individual parts. Many approaches to improving what organizations do are focused or are based in reductionist principles. You know, we look out in a services environment, or it might be a field service or insurance processing, or it could be in a manufacturing facility, and we look and we see there are some complex issues and processes here. So we break them down into smaller components, and we might make some changes to those individual components, usually with well-intended thoughts and ideas, and we make our best efforts. But when we assemble them, we find that at the end of the day, the results can be quite disappointing. Oftentimes, no improvement is observed at all, despite all of the resources and so on that organizations may invest in these efforts. So systems thinking it sits between business methods and dynamic analysis. We think of it as the glue that connects the two together in a very systematic, repeatable manner. Now, switching to dynamic analysis, which we will go into in more detail, and Neil touched upon them in our other podcast as well, dynamic analysis can be very complex to discuss. Have used influences or inspiration, if you will, in the dynamic analysis tools that we use that come from many disciplines. To name a few include biology, physics, as we said, system thinking, and others. We like to say that we stand upon the shoulders of people that have preceded us. Much great work has been out there, and one of the real innovations with profit mapping is the way in which it brings these three pillars together. Because each of the pillars in isolation are very helpful, but when you bring them together in an integrated, well thought through way, the business impact, the customer impact that you have is dramatically better, dramatically, than any of those approaches in isolation. So fortunately, the tools that we have created take much of the complexity out of this. Our three tools are business dynamics, workflow dynamics, and execution dynamics. Those first two, business dynamics and workflow dynamics, are designed to improve or flat out optimize the way that you plan for and run an organization. And the primary difference between those two tools is the time frame that you look at. So, for example, let's say you have a call center, and you have X number of thousands of calls that you may have to service on a given day or a given hour. You can use a tool like Business Dynamics to look at the interactions on a weekly basis in terms of can you fulfill the demand when you expand that out to a weekly basis or a monthly basis or a yearly basis. But I should mention Workflow Dynamics is the tool that takes you to a second-by-second interaction. So in that context where you're very concerned about meeting an intense call volume or on a plant floor meeting X number of units that you have to output on a second basis, both of these tools provide tremendous insights into the impact of if you make a change here, what is the impact elsewhere in the system? Will it have the intended impact? what are the unintended impacts that you might want to look at in more detail. So there's a lot of what-if modeling that goes on with those tools. And execution dynamics is the third tool in the suite. And that basically helps organizations execute better. It's that simple. It's a tool designed for the operational environment, whether it's for services or operations. And the nice thing is that these tools are integrated and work seamlessly with each other. So you can optimize and then execute, or you can execute as you already have operations in process and then optimize them on demand back and forth. And I might add that we like to use the term predictive operational analytics to describe these three pillars in action. It's an alternative term that the business intelligence audience, that the technical audiences will gravitate to, and it's also a chapter in execution dynamics. So let me briefly touch upon the steps involved in actually profit mapping. They're pretty straightforward. We'd like to think of it, I suppose, in terms of phases. We have the business execution profile phase, which is this is the qualitative tool that we use to understand what the business objectives are, to translate those down into the business domain that we are focusing on, and to make sure that all of the roles and stakeholders that are relevant have a say in terms of what's going on and their ideas and so on for improving the situation. This is where you bring in the human element up front, because our experience shows that if you jump directly to a solution approach without proper focus on the business issues, that oftentimes you will go down the wrong pathway, one that you can invest a lot of time and money and so on, but that may not be focused on what the actual problem is. So that's quite important to do up front. And one of the key outputs from the business execution profile tool is what we call the canvas for change. And the canvas for change is simply a collection of the multiple business objectives that you need to focus on or balance to be considered successful. And then what items or parameters or variables you may wish to look at changing to improve the situation. From that phase, we go into the process policy map phase, which is our visual process mapping tool that shows all of the details and interconnections, if you will, within a strategic business unit. What's unique about this is that there's a distinct customer and product focus. It's very intuitive to use, and if you've used any process mapping tool, it's simply really an extension of other methods that are out there. But we find that the customer and the product or service focus is crucial here for a couple of reasons. One is that oftentimes within organizations, it may be the first time that operations personnel may have actually looked at their operations from a truly customer perspective. So it's truly informative, eye-opening, to have that clear look into your own operations, but not from your perspective, but from a customer perspective. The second crucial thing about a process policy map is it concludes the qualitative phase, if you will, of the work in profit mapping, and it prepares you for the quantitative phase where you can use these dynamic analysis tools. So what we do in the next phase is we go and we create a baseline. And I should mention that this is what the focus here is on improvement or optimization. So the baseline is simply, it could be your operations today, or if you are setting up a brand new facility, it could be for the initial setup for that new facility that does not yet exist. And there's a lot of data collection and validation work that's important to do properly in this phase, because you're setting the stage with a proper understanding of how your operations currently work. Because if you don't understand that, what your current capabilities and limitations are, it makes it very difficult to know what changes you can make in that context. Because, you know, you may, for example, choose to add new resources or to move resources from the business unit and so on. And then from that, we go into our what-if scenarios. You know, from the business execution profile, there are a list of what-ifs that manage that the team comes together to formulate. And this is the step where you actually take those what-ifs and you configure them in these dynamic analysis tools. And as I said, the Profit Map Suite, these tools are designed to allow you to focus on the operations and business issues. They take much of the complexity out of a traditional modeling approach, in the sense that it allows you to simply configure your business unit and it creates the models automatically for you. So for those individuals who are familiar with modeling, this is a huge advantage, and it cuts out a lot of time and it allows you to move much quicker. And from those what-if scenarios, we then focus on risk and sensitivity. Because basically what happens is management will start to identify, you know, one, two, or three key approaches that are starting to look very favorable to them. I should add that profit mapping never tells people what to do. It is essentially a way to quantify different what-if ways to reconfigure your operations, both in time and space. And so from that, managers may have a number of risk issues that they wish to explore in more detail or look at the sensitivity around some of these solutions. And at that point, internal management decides what they want to do. Oftentimes, it's strategically driven. There's a larger business context in which these decisions are made, and that's why it's very important to not go in with any biases and let the facts speak for themselves about how the business unit will perform under any number of reconfigurations. And at that point, it's simply a matter of coming back from time to time on a demand basis or on demand and improve or continue with the optimization. But optimization is not something you do every day. You don't need to do it every day.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to look at the implementation of the program. You'd mentioned two companies before, a relatively high-performing company and then, you know, a turnaround situation that you had both been involved in. And we can use either or both of those companies, you know, to kind of compare and contrast the implementation in terms of, you know, once a CEO or someone in the C-suite says, you know, this is something that we want to pursue, what does it look like from implementation to execution or delivery? But I also want to pursue something else. In that implementation program, I'm going to assume that there's some common pitfalls that executives need to be prepared for. And if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to touch upon two that I think that I'm hearing from you, and you tell me if I'm on base or not. One of them is you have to anticipate that there's going to be unanticipated consequences of any change. You know, we can analyze the systems and the processes as much as we want, but there are going to be internal and external consequences that we can't anticipate at the beginning of the process. We've just got to go out there to a certain extent, make some changes, see how it affects the system, and then tweak it from there. But having said that, there's another problem that I see, and that is, how do you know that something's a problem? And here's what I mean by that. If I decide that I'm going to lose weight, there's two ways that I'm going to go about that. One is I'm going to reduce my caloric, I apologize to listeners for not being able to pronounce such a simple word, my intake, basically what I'm eating, and I'm going to exercise. And here's the two consequences of that. One, I'm going to be hungry and miserable. And secondly, my body's going to ache. So when I look at an unanticipated consequence and I say, okay, well, look, this is the impact that it's having on the system, perhaps that pain that we feel is a normal consequence of getting it right. Does this make sense, or am I just simply muddying the waters?
It makes absolute sense, and I appreciate you raising the issue. It's something that we encounter in all organizations. The issue of unanticipated consequences, there's a lot of pain, I think, out there in terms of organizations who have made changes in isolation, if you will, and you know, you wait for the results to accrue, and then suddenly you find lots of unintended consequences once you've had time for the changes to settle in. It could be consequences with both within the business unit that you're focusing on, or it could be a downstream or even an upstream business unit, which may be inside your organization or outside your organization. Well, let me make a few comments about some of the common challenges that we see out there and related to these observations of yours. First and foremost, we find that a project or an effort needs to be aligned with senior management's interests if you want to have the access to the resources and the sanctioning that you need. So in other words, it has to focus on the needs of the senior managers, because what we're really talking about is the people who have a vested interest, who look, you know, very intensely at the financial performance, among other things. One of the other challenges that's related to the unintended consequences is what we'd like to think of as integrated thinking. Oftentimes, when you walk into organizations, there's not a lot of integrated thinking that's going on overtly. Although when you speak with individuals one-on-one, you do find a lot of evidence for the integrated thinking. So one of the positive aspects of a profit mapping approach is that it brings the concept of integrated thinking to the forefront. And people, once they get involved, find that that's very intuitive to them. It's also very creative, and they enjoy. Because when you tell people, you know, we would like your ideas, you are experts in the business. We're not, as external individuals. You know more about your industry and the specifics of the operations on your floor and your services environment than we ever could. And so once empowered, we find that there is never an issue in terms of getting ideas both on intended consequences. If I invest in this, I should find this result, as well as what could go wrong here. And so an open and honest discussion is very healthy for the culture, and it's also imperative for a successful project, because some of those unintended consequences you may choose to explore from a risk standpoint. What's the likelihood that one of these things may actually happen? And if so, how might we respond to it? So these are things that you can then proactively bring into the project that you're working on. And this relates to this integrated thinking and encouragement of doing that also relates to culture. Culture is crucially important to the success of a project in any organization. It doesn't matter if it's a private sector or a not-for-profit, government or military or so on. You are always going to bump into cultural resistance to any type of change. And one of the important things with profit mapping, as I touched upon earlier, for example, with the business execution profile phase, is you secure buy-in immediately, because all of the people involved in the project come together with a common language, common business objectives, on a level playing field to examine the issues, and both qualitatively, but then to do sometimes very rigorous analyses to get to both, you know, the operational implications as well as the financial bottom line, if you will. So culture is extremely important, and we find that profit mapping starts to change the culture from day one in a very positive way.
If I could jump in here for a second, Robert, one of the things that we find when we start to draw the process policy map, there's a lot of dispute about what the actual data is. Everybody has their own version of the data. And that, you know, coming together and discussing that and trying to agree to the one process policy map, that in itself is such a valuable exercise for the clients that they start to see a lot of a lot of debates just sort of start to die out at that point, because everybody's working from their own silo, their own perspective, their own data, and when all that data comes together, and this, you know, when they compare notes, they find out they're really talking about a completely different environment than what actually is out there right now for them. So it's very healthy in that sense to bring everything together and in a visual context and have them just really, you know, debate the issues out there. But because of the structured approach that we use in the business execution profile, they're sort of forced to address all different aspects. So because of that, a lot of the unintended consequences issues sort of start to fall apart. There are always going to be unintended consequences. You can never model anything perfectly. You can never study anything perfectly. But you tend to reduce the risk of those by having everybody sort of put in there and force everybody in that context to address all the different aspects, you know, the technology issues, the business issues, the financial issues, the HR issues, you know, all those things together. And that's what the systems approach really allows us to do that.
That's a great point.
Let me jump in with a specific example, if it would be helpful, on what Anil is talking about. I think that the concept of maintenance is really striking and when you walk into an organization and look at what's going on in terms of how they're maintaining their operations so that in a manufacturing environment, for example, you're maintaining the proper uptime and quality on the equipment, on your assets, or in a services environment where maybe you have trucks out in the field and you're performing maintenance on them and so on. This, from a data standpoint, you would think with the proliferation of information technology systems, of enterprise systems over the preceding decades, that organizations would have excellent data. And it's striking how bad much of the data or inconsistent it is when you look into the details. If you look, you know, with profit mapping, we'd like to talk about it's important to look at issues from multiple perspectives. So oftentimes, when we look at maintenance data from the maintenance perspective, it represents how they're collecting it and so on. But then if you go to the service environment or the plant floor and you look at it from a process standpoint and the data that they collect, there can be wide discrepancies between the two. And you have to, you know, at face value, wonder what's going on. It's really not the fault of these individuals. It's really an issue around the data. And as Anil was saying, one of the positive things with profit mapping here is because you require, assuming, for example, maintenance is one of the dimensions that you're interested in, you require the various parties to come together and speak to each other and to have conversations about why is there a mismatch between these data. And that conversation is very healthy because it allows the groups to see what's going on from the other group's perspective, and they can begin to collaborate very effectively together to get to the bottom line or the core truth as to what's actually happening. Because once you're at that point, it's very easy to work together to look at the, both the intended and unintended consequences of some of the decisions that you're exploring.
Good point. Good point. Well, Adam and Anil, again, before we close our two-episode discussion on profit mapping and execution dynamics, I'd like to once again give you the opportunity to share, you know, perhaps some parting thoughts or advice to listeners interested in applying some of you and your team's principles and tools.
Yes, thank you. One of the things I would like to mention is the customer quantum concept. We raised this in the Execution Dynamics, our most recent book. And what's important here is that on the one hand, while profit mapping provides a rich canvas for optimization, the customer quantum concept, of which Anil talked about in the other podcast, is a way of applying the profit mapping concepts to achieve the business objectives. And this is very important because it gives you a very effective way for thinking about how to structure your organization to compete most effectively in time, space, and spatial dimensions. In space, we think of, for example, how do you configure your operations in a facility for best performance? But that in and of itself is not enough. You also have to bring in the time dimension and run them most effectively according to the rhythm, the customer interface rhythm, And you also have to run them in a way that will produce the financial results that you expect out of your efforts. So I mentioned that as one example that I wanted to touch upon. I would also add to that oftentimes managers we see as being very comfortable in thinking in terms of the spatial dimension. Literally, you can look out on the plant floor and see things that you can do. You can change, you can move them around, you can bring in new equipment. And as you move up the management chain to you know, executive level, what you'll see is a focus on the time dimension. You know, we have these customers, it's imperative that we have to serve them within a particular time frame to be successful. And not only that, we have to achieve financial performance within a given time period, because they don't have it. The windows of opportunity here are very narrow, and so it's imperative that you reach those goals. And what's nice about profit mapping is that it brings all of these perspectives, both in terms of space and time, but all of the functional perspectives within an organization, operations, maintenance, human resources, and so on, so that they all can work together for the common good of customers as well as the organization.
Robert, the only thing I would like to add is that a lot of time when people think of quantitative approach, they always come back and say, well, our data is not that good, so we can't really apply that. And that's a valid point to some degree. What we like to tell them is that don't worry about the data. Even if you don't have any data, you have a lot of knowledge in your operations people. Let's just put that on the paper, and let's just start to do sensitivity around that, because you'd be surprised how quickly you can figure out how good quality data you need and where the quality of the data is needed and where it is not needed. So quantitative approaches are very powerful if you incorporate the sensitivity analysis like that in them. And when you couple them with the qualitative nature as an overriding sort of a component in there, then they become very powerful. And that's what we've tried to do in profit mapping.
Adam, Neil, many thanks for joining us today. And of course, over the past two episodes, I hope you'll join us again sometime in the not too distant future.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, and we look forward to that.
That was Anil Minawat and Adam Garfine, co-founders of Minawat & Company and co-authors of Profit Mapping and Execution Dynamics, in the concluding episode of a special two-part program focused on the use of profit mapping to drive cost efficiencies, as well as the use of profit mapping and principles from their book Execution Dynamics to fuel strategy and revenue growth. Please join us for our next episode when we speak with David Allen. David is widely regarded as the world's leading authority on personal and organizational productivity and is the author of bestsellers such as Getting Things Done and Ready for Anything. He joins us to discuss some of the fundamental principles and frameworks he's developed to enhance personal and organizational productivity and how they apply to CEOs, CFOs, and other senior leaders. Until then, this is Robert Barnwell and CEO Talk Radio wishing you all the best.
We hope that you have enjoyed this episode and found the material of value. To download a transcript of this episode, receive a free subscription to the show, or to learn more about this subject, we encourage you to visit Professor Barnwell's website at robertgbarnwell.com to explore the many executive briefings, presentations, case studies, and other resources available for immediate download. This has been a production of Robert G. Barnwell. All rights reserved.